Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Welcome in, everybody, to Tony Mack and the Triplett. This is the first show of the new year. And we are already starting the year off by hitting the ground running. Our show will be abbreviated this morning by Alabama basketball. So we'll be out of here. We'll be in here for just an hour today. Well, my goodness. In that hour, we have a lot to talk about. We encourage you to join us. You can do that by dialing 866-485-9867. That's 866-485-WUMP. Or you can reach out on Twitter at Tony Mack Triplett, at Tony Mack UMP is how you get to me directly, or at A Trip Tennis. But you can avoid remembering all of that by just going to Tony Mack Triplett and just clicking our links in the bio. I mean, we're right there. It's as easy as can be. So just go check that out. Hit the follow button if you'd like, but tweet your reactions to what we're going to talk about today. Get your opinion in here. As always, we love to hear from you guys. First on the agenda, Aaron, our national championship is set. Monday night, we'll cap off another fast-moving season where Alabama will take on Georgia in the second ever All-SEC national championship and the first ever in the college football playoff era. We will talk both of their semifinal matchups and how they got here, as well as talk about the unique moment this presents with two teams facing off that are eerily similar. Also, I hope you have some gas left in the tank from the college football playoff because the NFL playoffs start today. I know, Aaron, we'll get your thoughts on that because I know you're really excited. And they'll carry on through tomorrow with four wild card matchups this weekend, so we'll talk a little of that as well. John Gruden is officially back in coaching, 10 years, $100 million to become the new head coach at Oakland, the longest contract in NFL history. Not only is he back in coaching, he's back at Oakland. And a report on ESPN has broken out about the disruption happening in New England. I don't know if Aaron's heard about this. I know we talked a little about it yesterday, so we'll get into that. And from there, we will fill in the gaps with the ridiculous amount of memorable players that have all declared for the NFL draft in just the matter of a couple days. So first, Aaron, I know that's a lot to process. How are you this morning?
I'm good. It's good to be back. I was out last week. Tanner came in and filled in for me. But, yeah, I mean, there's just been a lot going on. And, of course, you mentioned the second ever SEC, all-SEC national championship. It could probably be counted as the third if you go all the way back to Florida State in the late 90s. That was, of course, right before the BCS era. But they played and then at the end of the regular season, of course, and then again in, I think, the Sugar Bowl. And Florida lost and then won the rematch. And for Spurrier's, I think, only championship at Florida. But it's interesting, and being an Auburn fan, sitting on the outside looking in this game, and you're just like, man. Most people are just like, man, it really stinks to be an Auburn fan, and it kind of does. It kind of does. You're watching your two biggest rivals play for the national championship after beating them both by double digits in the regular season. Granted, we lost to Georgia in the SEC championship. Georgia played a much better game, came much better prepared. Well, Auburn wasn't completely healthy. But Georgia, a lot of credit because they prepared. What Georgia did in the SEC championship game was they took away a lot of things that Auburn did with success in the first game. And Auburn just didn't play as well defensively.
Well, let me just say this, Aaron. After watching you guys play that game, or Auburn play that game and lose in the SEC championship, and then watching my Sooners lose in double overtime, trust me, you would much rather know that you were going to lose and much rather have it over with by about the third quarter than losing double overtime like that. Because let me tell you something, my heart couldn't handle it. It was tough.
Those always hurt the worst, and I'm telling you, I will say this. The one thing that I took solace over in losing the SEC championship and knowing that Auburn wasn't going to go to the playoff was knowing that we weren't going to have to play Alabama again. And for a couple of reasons. One, you beat Alabama in the regular season and then lose to them in the playoff, which Auburn could potentially be here if they had won the SEC championship game. As a fan, I don't think I can handle playing Alabama twice. Well, I just don't think I can handle it. So, and the fact that it's difficult to beat Alabama twice in the same season.
Yeah.
I mean, it's difficult to beat any team, a good team, twice in the same season. But Alabama, the standard of good teams, I don't know if it would have happened again, especially on a neutral field. I don't think it probably wouldn't have happened again. So I'm kind of glad about that. At least Auburn got the win there.
While we're talking about Auburn, let's stay on that track for just a second. And I'm sure you share the same ridiculous feelings I do about this. UCF claims their national championship. They changed their name on Twitter. They've got a parade going up, and they're raising a banner for this national championship. They've handed out championship bonuses to their coaches that are leaving for Nebraska, those that are eligible for their bonus. So my question to you as an Auburn fan, if this was a playoff game, how confident are you that it would have been a different outcome?
I'm fairly confident.
Me
because
too. I share that same belief.
Because, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm 150% confident that Auburn would have won the game, but Auburn played a mediocre game at best. It was one of the worst games they had played all season, with the exception of probably Clemson. Clemson was the worst game Auburn played all year. Well, the second half against LSU, I'll take that back. The second half of the LSU game was the worst Auburn's played all season long. And Auburn, no motivation really to play this game. They're watching their two biggest rivals play in the playoff on later that same day, and they're sitting having to go back to Mercedes-Benz to play in Atlanta again against somebody's got to get that group of five team. Somebody's got to get them. Somebody has to play them when they have – and UCF has everything. That's their Super Bowl. That's the biggest game of the season for them. And the thing about UCF is not only was it the biggest game of the year for them, but they have athletes. Don't underestimate UCF. They have a lot of athletes. They're well-coached. Scott Frost is a good coach. A lot of athletes. Shaquem Griffin is – a beast.
A hell of an inspiration.
He is something else. So fast on the edge. So difficult to block. They're a good team. But, I mean, they were a team of motivated athletes with playing for their coach. They had every reason to step out on that field and play a good game. And it was still a 7-point game, and Auburn still had chances to win. So I think that if that had been a playoff with playoff implications moving on to the next round, I think Auburn would have handled business.
Yeah, let's put, before we get into the play that happened on New Year's Day, before we get into the playoff games that happened on New Year's Day, we need to kind of save that for the end and build up before we make our picks for the national championship game. Let's get into some of the other stuff that's happened, and what better to start than the headlines that happened between our last live local show yesterday afternoon that ended at 6, the Tom Abraham Show, and now. And there are a few headlines, Aaron. I'm sure you're aware of most of them. If not, we'll get your reaction to them here in just a second. But number one, if you wanted an 8-team playoff, you're going to have to wait, because the announcement came yesterday that there will be no expansion, and it would require a unanimous vote from all conferences if that were going to happen. So it looks like we're going to have to wait until that contract's up before we renegotiate this thing.
Now, I didn't read that. I did read that. I did not read that article in its entirety. Did it say all conferences? Is that just Power Five? That has to be just Power Five, because Group of Five teams don't really have a say.
Either way, it's going to have to wait until the current contract is up. It looks like
that's kind of surprising to me, because with the way that already to this point the committee has shown inconsistency with what they're going to judge on. So far, whether they want best team or what they're taking into account as far as, you know, what's it going to take to get into the college football playoff. And I guess to this point, they've leaned towards the side of the eye test and who's the better team on the field, which I agree with. I think that's the best, because they went with Ohio State a year ago and they went with Alabama this year. But the fact that they have to question what they're going to weigh more this season versus the next season, they always talk about that. They talk about it all the time, and I don't think that that should be a conversation. And with the way that it is, each year with five power conferences, at least one's going to get left out every year, and I guess everybody was okay with that. But with this year, with two getting left out, and then, of course, last year with A conference champ getting left out. I don't know. I feel like it's – I feel like you could see a unanimous vote from the Power Five conferences at some point. If something like this happens again next year, or I think it would have been a lot different if Notre Dame had won out and ended up with Georgia, Alabama, Notre Dame.
But at this point, we just can't play the what-ifs. We have to wait till next year.
Yeah.
So, real quick, I know you're going to want to respond to this on Twitter, and I can't wait to respond as well. JR, the J-U-N-F, says, at Tony Mack, UCG, I'm assuming he means UCF, was ranked number one by 12 different computer rankings. Their claim is legitimate. As for Auburn playing their worst game, that was UCF's worst game, too. That's a joke. One of the most accurate quarterbacks missing wide-open guys. That didn't happen in the regular season. Okay, so you want to talk about him missing some open guys. That happens, Jay, but let's talk about that ridiculous touchdown pass he made into the end zone where he's scrambling to his right and he makes this ridiculous throw. He had some amazing plays that definitely just overlapped those bad plays he made, number one. And number two, let's talk about the motivational factor. Number one, I'm not a guy who likes to talk about that often, but let's just talk about this. And Colin Cowherd put it perfectly. This is UCF's Super Bowl, okay? And you can say, well, Auburn might have been demotivated because they didn't make the playoff, whatever, whatever. Let's just look strictly at their schedule. This was UCF's Super Bowl. This was Auburn's seventh biggest game on their schedule. So it's a lot different. If they both had the same thing to play for, it would have totally been different. If they were both playing for a chance to continue to move on into the postseason, I think you would have seen a better game out of Auburn, because Auburn's better game is hands down better than UCF's best game. Shaquin Griffin's awesome, don't get me wrong, but as a talent level and as a team that we've seen execute, when this Auburn team executes really well, It's one of the best in the country. It's no knock to UCF being a Group of Five school. That just goes to the fact that a team that lost four games this year, three before the UCF game, is hands down on their better day, on a good day, better than your best day. I'm not saying Auburn's best day is better than your best day, because that's without a question. Their good day is better than your best day, and they just didn't look good.
And I will say this, too, that contrary to what people say and what he said and what everybody has said, Kerryon Johnson was not 100% in this game. It wasn't. He just wasn't. He may have said that he was.
I don't
was.
Know that there was an argument that he was. I know that he played and he wanted to play.
He said, like somebody asked him, are you 100%? And he said, oh, for sure. And Gus said he was good to go. He wasn't. If I was him, and I know that I'm against players sitting out, I don't like it when players sit out. I understand why they do it. If anybody had a right to sit out of a game, he did. It says a lot about him, I think, as a kid with character playing in the game. But I wouldn't have played if I was him. He's just so banged up. I think he made the right decision to turn to the NFL after. He's just an injury-ridden ridden kid, and that happens, that people get nicked up, but he had a great year.
Knowing that he made that decision to go pro, I love his decision to play in the game, because for me, as a guy that's got a lot of passion for the school he cheers for, that just shows that Kerryon had a lot of passion and he wanted to go out playing another game for Auburn. He didn't want that uncertainty of will he ever play again there. He didn't come out and say it was his last game, but at least he gave one more, you know, heartfelt performance before he left to the next level. So I really, and I'm not even an Auburn fan, but I'm sure as you being an Auburn fan, you really appreciated that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just, like I said, it says a lot about character that he wanted to play in this last game. And I was talking about him to some of, I think my brother and one of our other buddies, how I don't think he's going to be there's no way he's going to be an every down back in the NFL. He's just too injury prone to be an every down back, but I think he would be a great compliment to somebody. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He does a lot of things well. He's not going to wow you with breakaway speed or anything like that, but his patience, his vision, his football IQ as a running back is next to none. So those kind of things are things that you'll get out of him at the next level.
Sorry, I'm replying. I agree with you, but I'm replying.
You're replying on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm officially replying to the tweet, and I'm got to find the poop emoji to tell them what the claim is for UCF's national championship. But let's go back to these headlines really quick before we take a break. We're going to have to take breaks a little quicker today to try to even this thing out. But I just want to read the rest of the headlines that happened between last night and this morning. Missouri has replaced the void at offensive coordinator and quarterback coach that Josh Heupel left by taking that UCF head coaching gig with Derek Dooley. Derek Dooley, now the offensive coordinator in Missouri. Don't hang your hat on the fact that his last season at Tennessee, they had the 35th best offense in the country. I don't think that's quite going to cut it. And I think it's a step down. Going from Josh Heupel to Derek Dooley is going to be a step down. I could be wrong. Well, time is going to have to tell on that one.
I personally don't even know how Derek Dooley is still working in football.
Well, he's been a wide receiver coach for the Cowboys.
I know. I always, being a Cowboys fan, seeing him almost every week, and I'm just wondering, what the heck is Derek Dooley still doing here? That's just all I say every week. But it's amazing that he still has a job in football.
Oh, absolutely agree. And LSU, they parted ways with Matt Canada, the highest paid offensive coordinator at $1.5 million. Also, they have the highest paid defensive coordinator now at $2.5 million in Dave Aranda. The interesting part about that is only 46 coaches, the head coaches this year, made more than $2.5 million. Ed Orgeron made $3.5 million. So their defensive coordinator is getting $1 million less than the head guy there. Jared Stidham announced he will return to Auburn for the 2018 season. And the Giants have interviewed Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniel for the head coaching vacancy in New York. And
Belichick was interested in the Giants job as well.
Jay replied, and he said, "Kerryon Johnson playing the game knowing he's going pro shows the game meant a ton to him and the team. Kind of blows the motivation excuse out of the water." No, I said it meant a lot to him. I didn't say it necessarily. I'm sure it did mean a lot to the team. It didn't mean they were motivated to go out there and play. I'm sure they appreciated the fact that he was going to play, but it doesn't mean that they had the same thing to play for the UCF did. Auburn winning that Peach Bowl didn't mean nearly as much as it did for UCF to win that Peach Bowl. Had you put something extra on the line, like the college football playoff, something that equally meant the same thing to each team, it would have been different. That's all I'm saying. But we're going to take a quick, and I'm not sure he's going to understand that. But judging by Twitter, he's not going to, and that's fine. We can all disagree. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into some of the headlines we just briefly spoke about. We'll jump into John Gruden going to Oakland and the national championship game and their road to get there. All next, coming up right after the break, Tony Mack and the Triplet, 730, 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet here on Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Beautiful, a very frigid, cold Saturday morning here, but there's a lot of hope that warms the hearts of SEC fans. Well, it's not really hope. You're going to get a national championship. It just depends on which division at this point. It's either Georgia or Alabama. Which red do you prefer? Do you like Bulldogs or Elephants? We're going to figure all of that out. And Aaron and I are going to talk about that and make our picks here in just a few moments. But first, let's talk about the semifinals, Aaron. Let's talk about the matchups that each of these teams won that led them to this game. Let's start with Alabama and Clemson. The nightcap in the Sugar Bowl that just kept constantly getting pushed back because of the double overtime Rose Bowl that we got. We had Alabama come in here and dominate Clemson in this football game. If I told you at the beginning, before the game, I said, hey, Clemson's only going to have 188 total yards in this football game against Alabama. Do you think the score would have been better than 24-6?
If you said they were going to have more, you said?
No, if I told you Clemson was only going to have 188 total yards of offense, would you have believed me if I said the score was only 24-6?
No.
Me either.
But it's because Alabama only had 261 yards of offense.
Well, they did it. They ended up pulling away in this game and winning due to a couple really big turnovers in the red zone. Back-to-back, Deron Payne and then Mack Wilson with a couple picks. Deron Payne gets the touchdown catch, and that's the play that got talked about a lot. And I'm really excited. Alabama fans should be really excited that that happened, because instead of Alabama pulling away and I don't think they would have been able to drive the length of the field those last couple of times and make it 24-6. I think they probably would have won something really ugly, a lot uglier, had those turnovers, one of them not been a pick six and the other one not been
Clemson territory.
And what that does is, instead of focusing on Alabama once again stalling on offense, which I know there are people out there talking about it, but it's not making national news. Like the thing people remember out of this game right now is Deron Payne getting to do his touchdown, Nick Saban getting knocked down by Hurts, and then looking into the camera. All the fun stuff is what they remember about this game. Let's not forget that to start the second half, when it was 10-3, Jalen Hurts again mishandles a handoff to a running back, and that sets Clemson up. Clemson, when they kicked a field goal to make it 10-6, I said, this one's over. Alabama's going to win this game. Clemson can't get in the end zone. But that's going to be a serious concern for Alabama moving forward into this game. I don't know that Georgia can score a whole lot of points to beat Alabama in this game, but I'll tell you what. They're in for a long night. I think Georgia can force some turnovers. I know neither one of these guys throw a lot of interceptions, but right now it looks like Jalen Hurts looks more uncomfortable in his offense than that of Jake Fromm. And if that's the case, Georgia might have a legitimate shot at this thing, but the fact that DeRon Payne did all these things that were really fun and cool, that's taking the pressure off of, once again, a stalling offense against a good defense.
Alabama's offense is so hard. It's hard to get a read on this year under Brian Daboll. And while I mean, just thinking about Jalen Hurts is the most he has the most talent of any Alabama quarterback that's played in the Saban era. But he's been he's not a very good passer. He's just not. It's not his thing. I'll tell you what he is, though. He's very smart. He knows when to run the ball. He knows when to throw the ball away. He did it all against Auburn. He was just throwing it away. You know, he knows how to scramble. He knows how to do what he does well. But they're not very good throwing the football. I mean, they only threw for 120 yards in this game. And Clemson's defense is one of the top four in the country. The top four defenses in college football, three of them were in the playoff. The other one was Auburn. And what Auburn's defense did to Jalen Hurts and the Alabama offense in the Iron Bowl. And this game, of course, it comes down to the turnovers, and I saw this stat that was very interesting. It was Clemson scored 10 touchdowns in two games with Deshaun Watson at quarterback. They did not score one in a game without him. And they're right. It's a once-in-a-generation player come and carving up a historically great defense last year, two years in a row.
I want to be clear when you talk about how good Clemson's defense is. They are incredible. But in this particular game, it was not Clemson's defense that disrupted this Alabama offense and made them inept to scoring. What happened is the game plan was there. At times, Daboll wasn't really calling. Saban was chewing him out towards the end of the football game. But to me, it felt like and looked like at times that Alabama had things available for them to be successful. They were getting in their own way. They weren't executing the way we've seen Alabama execute. Up until that Auburn game, they've been able to execute at times. I know they had late fourth quarter drama. I almost said dramatic drama a couple times. I had to stop myself. Late dramatics against Mississippi State and Starkville, but they scored a lot of points in that game. This Alabama offense and Jalen Hurts, even all the way up until that Auburn game, no matter how poor he's been at throwing the football, he's always found ways to make plays and keep them in a game. And as far as the last two games they played, he hasn't necessarily done that. Whether it's been the defense or it's just been him not executing the way he's supposed to. And in this instance, I feel like he just wasn't executing the way that he can. And I don't think it had that much to do with the defense. I'm not taking away from this great Clemson defense. I think they did all they could.
And also, Alabama dominated the field position battle. This was a field position game, especially in that first half. Clemson was starting what it felt like on their own 10-yard line, and Alabama would get short fields off of, you know, punts and punt returns and things like that. They had a short field to work with several times.
You either have to have a dynamic offense that can score anywhere on the field, or you have to make sure you force turnovers to beat Alabama, because they have the best field position weapon in all of college football, and that is the leg of J.K. Scott.
And what's funny is 2 years ago, he had a really bad year. I think it was his sophomore year. He was not very good. But I tell you, he'll put it 70 yards down the field. But something that Auburn did, because Auburn kind of, at least this year, Auburn has beaten Alabama and Nick Saban with the running quarterback and the run-pass option and dynamic, you know, that kind of offense. They beaten him with, it was Cam Newton and Nick Marshall. This year, Auburn beat Alabama in a night and day different way with Jarrett Stidham at quarterback. Run it, or he'd get out of the pocket. He would throw. He'd stand in the pocket. He picked Alabama apart. But the offense set him up to do so, and that's why I think, of course, Oklahoma would have had a better chance in this game with Baker Mayfield kind of doing what Stidham did in that game. And of course, Kelly Bryant wasn't going to pick anybody apart in this game, and that's kind of where I see this game going with against Georgia. Alabama always has success against teams that want to run the football the way Georgia does, and so it plays right into their hands. It's going to depend on. I mean, Clemson. I don't remember how many starters on the offensive line they lost from last year's team. I know they lost a handful of starters all around from last year's championship team, but Georgia's going to want to run the football. And one thing Auburn did against Alabama, and I'm bringing up the Auburn game because it's the only game Alabama lost. So one thing Auburn did on both sides of the ball was they dominated the line of scrimmage. If Georgia can come in and do what they at least get some sort of push on the offensive line and then dominate on the defensive, and their defensive line takes over Alabama's offensive line, they'll have a chance to win this game.
Well, once again, another game to go back and watch if you want to see Georgia control the line of scrimmage. Forget the Oklahoma game. Oklahoma's, you know, doesn't have the size up front. So while Georgia did dominate up front, it wasn't necessarily as impressive as the SEC championship game where that offensive line looked spectacular. They looked fantastic in the Rose Bowl as well, but Auburn's more physically threatening to Georgia up front than Oklahoma's defense was. So if you want any kind of security as a Georgia fan, just praise yourself and praise that team on the offensive line play and, or like Aaron said, the line of scrimmage play on both sides of the ball the last couple of games, and that should give you some confidence going into this because Jake Fromm, as excellent as he's been, he needs that setup. And I don't want to use the freshman excuse, but in this particular instance against Alabama, he needs that setup from his running backs to open up some things downfield, because if they just come out and start slinging it 35, 40 times against Alabama, whether he's a freshman or he's Baker Mayfield, it's going to be tough for Georgia to make those throws, because when you're a one-dimensional team, Alabama will find a way to get to you. They're not necessarily going to have great coverage downfield, but they're going to make sure they get away to destroy and murder your quarterback, and Jake Fromm's future could be in jeopardy if that happens, because he could get killed back there if they're not able to run the football. But the best part about that is Georgia has a bunch of different ways to try to do that. They have three spectacular running backs. They try to mix it up with the Wildcat as well, so we'll see some of that. We'll see a lot of that. We could see another jump pass, but this time from Georgia. I mean, you could see anything.
Athletes all the way around. They've got weapons to throw the ball to. What's key for Georgia, it's almost more important, I would argue, and I would actually almost say that it's fact, that it is more critical for Georgia to dominate the line of scrimmage when they are on the offense than when they are on defense. Because on offense, they're going to have to run the ball with some success to keep Alabama honest. And when they're passing, they're going to have to be able to pass protect and force Alabama to bring extra guys. Because Alabama historically, at least especially with last year's team and how good they were able to get so much pressure with their front four. They could just drop seven guys back in coverage and rush four and get to the quarterback in no time. If they can force Alabama to bring extra guys and Fromm sits in the pocket and is able to make some throws, they're going to have a chance in this ball game. And that's really the key. The key is Georgia's offense. How is Georgia's offense going to play in this game? Are they going to be able to establish what they do best? Are they going to be able to play their game in this game? If they're not, they're going to lose. They're going to have a chance.
The one thing I'll say for Georgia is in the field position game, is you're going to have to make sure you don't necessarily have to go down and score every drive. It'd be nice for anybody to do that. But for Georgia in particular, you can't make sure if you do get backed up, and I'm sure there will be times you get backed up deep in your own territory because of the leg of J.K. Scott and probably a couple missed field goals of Papanastas. But when you get backed up there, you've got to make sure you move the ball enough to flip the field position.
Field position in this game is huge.
You have to be excellent on all three aspects of the ball, and I think if we've seen anything this year, we've seen Kirby Smart do an excellent job being able to adjust and figure out how to make things work. The adjustments in the Rose Bowl were fantastic. That's a game we haven't talked about yet. This was a double overtime thriller. My Oklahoma Sooners get beat. They blow a halftime lead after a weird squib kick for the half that sets Georgia up to be down two touchdowns instead of three scores. And then from there, it was conservative football from Oklahoma in the third quarter. Lincoln Riley was playing not to lose that game. He wasn't playing to win in the second half, but that's not an excuse because regardless, Georgia was an unstoppable force for that really undersized and overwhelmed Oklahoma defense. In any game, 38 points, 500. If you score 38 points and put up over 500 yards on one of the best defenses in the country and you have a defensive score, you're supposed to win that game. and it didn't happen in this one. That's exactly what Oklahoma did. It didn't happen. They didn't win it. And it's heartbreaking. It goes all on that defense and scheming by Lincoln Riley. You put your quarterback, the Heisman Trophy winner, in the position that you want him in. It's overtime. Georgia just kicked a field goal, and it's overtime. And you put Baker Mayfield in a position that he thrives on, and that is big-time moments, and you don't let him attempt to pass. Instead, you kick a field goal, almost caused me to puke, and then go to double overtime, and once again, you try to run these on third and short. You try to run these misdirection plays and confuse the defense. And that's one thing Lincoln Riley is going to have to learn to grow on, and I have faith that he will, and it's this. It's you are at Oklahoma now. That is a big-time program. You have the athletes, especially offensively, to where it's third and two. Just stick to what you do normally. You don't have to run a trick play or try to catch the opposing team off guard to pick up a first down. You can match up with them physically up front, offensively. Defensively this year you could not. Offensively, Rodney Anderson was averaging 7 yards, almost 8 yards a carry in this game. Up the gut. Run it up the gut. You get your first downs. Lincoln Riley's going to have to learn that. At Oklahoma, this is big boy football. You're not at ECU anymore. You can hand the ball off to your guy and expect him to get a first down. You don't have to trick the defense. But he's got a lot of room to grow, and I think he will. Overall, I'm pleased. It's not necessarily a time. I could sit here and go off on a rant about firing Mike Stoops. But it's time to sit back and appreciate what this team, and Clemson as well, it's time to sit back and not think about the things you could have done better and who you're mad at. It's time to sit back and thank the senior class for a great season and a great career. And that's I'm very thankful for all the guys at Oklahoma. But let's flip to the, since you've talked about all the things Georgia's done and what they need to do against Alabama, there's really no surprise there. So let's talk about this game in particular. Double overtime thriller. I think it's obvious at this point that the two best Rose Bowls are, and I know the order you're going to put them in, but rank the two best Rose Bowls and how close that margin is. And the other one, obviously, is the USC-Texas Rose Bowl, the 2005-2006 season, where Texas ended up pulling away and beating USC last play of the game with a Vince Young scramble. How close are these games in terms of best Rose Bowl ever?
It's difficult because that one had a national championship on the line.
Well, this one did too. It just wasn't the actual game.
Yes, you're right. The other one, and see, I don't know. I guess I'm biased towards that game because if anybody – that USC-Texas game is the greatest football game that I've ever seen in my life. I'd yet to see anything. I think I was in seventh grade. I was in seventh grade when that game took place, and I remember watching the whole thing like it was yesterday. I hadn't seen a football game that good to that point, and I have not seen a football game like that since. The closest thing was last year's national championship game. But this game, as far as Rose Bowls, at Rose Bowls that aren't the USC-Texas game, it's probably the best one I've ever seen. Last year's was great, but I mean, nothing was really on the line in that game. But it was a great game last year, Penn State, USC, and then there was Michigan and Texas with Vince Young the year before they beat USC. That one was a really good one. Came down to a last second field goal. But this one would be right up there. I would be hard pressed to find. You'd probably go way back and find one that was really good. But this one with the playoff, everything on the line. This was great, and it had just about everything you wanted. People would say, well, there was no defense in this game. There was a few big stops by both teams, and then they had a defensive score. So you got a little bit of everything in this game, and it was the number of big plays in this game was exciting.
Let's look at that whole there was no defense in this game aspect. The Oklahoma side, yes, you're absolutely right, there was no defense. Georgia's offense, all they had to do was show up and they were going to score points, which that's still a testament to how good Georgia's running game is. They're fantastic. Oklahoma, we knew that was going to be a big mismatch for Oklahoma. They weren't going to be able to match up with those guys. But to say that Georgia didn't play any defense in this game is tough to say because they're one of the best defensive teams in the country. When you tell me Georgia didn't play defense in this game, what that tells me is you think they might have been a little overrated. And I disagree with that. Or you're telling me, well, they didn't show up motivated to play. Those are the only two reasons you can say Georgia didn't have any defense in this game. And number one, they're obviously motivated to play. They have a chance to go to a championship on the line. What that tells me is they're not overrated. It just tells me Oklahoma, their offense was absolutely legitimate. They were going to score on anybody, and everybody said that. So when you get to this football game and they scored on Georgia, you can't say, well, Georgia didn't play any defense. Oklahoma did what you thought they were going to do. They went out there and they scored on one of the best defenses in the country. And on the flip side, Oklahoma just couldn't play any defense of their own. And hats off to Georgia. Hats off to Kirby Smart and Jake Fromm and those running backs to make those adjustments, and especially for the defense, to make those adjustments at halftime, hold Oklahoma to one offensive touchdown in the second half, and pull away and win this game. If you go down and read the stats, look at this, block out the Georgia stats, you're telling me on one of the best defenses in the country, Oklahoma gets a scoop and score, they get 38 offensive points, Baker Mayfield goes 23 of 35, which is roughly 68%, 287 yards, two touchdowns, a pick, and Rodney Anderson had 201 yards rushing. There's no way Kirby Smart looks at this line and says Oklahoma loses this football game. That is a testament to Georgia's fight and will to fight back and win this game, because Oklahoma looked incredibly dominant on offense and they still lost.
Well, Georgia came out that second half and made some adjustments in that third quarter, shutting Oklahoma out in that third quarter.
They had like 3 one-play touchdown drives.
They had a couple of, I think, 2 straight 3-and-outs to open up that third quarter. And I tell you, this Georgia defense is so talented. And for once, the best defensive player in college football does not play for Alabama. He plays for Georgia in Roquan Smith. And
that guy's closeout speed on getting to the ball, getting to the outside and the sideline, running vertically, running laterally.
He's something else. He's a special player, and he's going to be a special player at the next level as well. He's going to be a big factor in this national championship game as well. But Georgia, you know, they came out that second half. They made the necessary adjustments. I think one thing that Georgia came out and they didn't – I don't think they expected Oklahoma to have such immediate and profound success that they did so early. And it kind of – I think it kind of came out and took them by surprise because of the amount of speed and just – the way Oklahoma runs offense, I said it all season, Oklahoma's going to score on anybody. They're going to put up 30 on anybody they play. They'd have played Alabama, they'd have played Clemson, they'd have played Auburn, they'd have put up 30 on anybody that they had played. The only question with Oklahoma was, could your defense get enough stops? And while they got a couple early, they couldn't get enough down the stretch.
Yeah. It's really sad that one of the best offenses we've ever seen, and I don't think there's any question after what they did to this Georgia defense, I don't think there's any question that this is one of the better offenses we've ever seen. It's sad that that went to waste.
It is. And you've seen there's been – and I feel the same way when not quite as – definitely not as good of an offense as this Oklahoma team, but Auburn back in 2014, the year after they went to the national championship, a little bit more inconsistent than they were in 2013 running at will. But that was a great offensive team.
Yeah,
but the defense they had. Me and my buddies talk about it all the time. That we say, if Auburn would have had the defense they had from 2010 or 2013 and 2014, they'd have done the same thing. It's just hot knife through butter, Swiss cheese. Oh, Swiss cheese is me and my brother famously call it.
You can chalk this up to me being an Oklahoma fan talking about this offense, but. They're not the highest scoring offense in NCAA history. The 2013 Florida State offense is, and they broke Oklahoma's 08 record. But if you were giving me any offense to ever pick and put with just an average defense, I'm taking this offense over the Sam Bradford 08 offense, where they had two 1,000-yard rushers and a 4,800-yard passer. I'm taking this offense over that offense any day of the week, and I'm taking this offense over Jameis Winston's Florida State offense any day of the week, because the running back depth for this Oklahoma team is ridiculous. They have one of the better quarterbacks in college football we've ever seen, and there's no doubt about that in terms of efficiency and the way he's worked. You can talk about his attitude or whatever, but in terms of what he's done on the field, we haven't seen just about anything better than that. And Lincoln Riley, for the majority of the season, has been great at calling plays. But we're going to take a break here in just a second, Aaron, and we're going to briefly touch, it'll be our last segment, we're going to briefly touch on the NFL playoffs. We have to move into that because we've got that coming up here in just a little bit. But first, give me a brief description and your prediction of the national championship game.
I think this is going to be I think it's going to be an ugly game. I think it's going to be a lot more low scoring than the Rose Bowl for sure. And I think the difference comes down to whether or not Jake Fromm can be successful throwing the ball and whether or not Georgia can do on offense what they want to do. I could give you two different picks. I could give you what I want to happen, and I could give you what I actually think is going to happen.
Well, if you tell us what you think is going to happen, we're going to know what you want to happen.
What I think is going to happen is Alabama's going to win the field position battle. They're going to have about 220 yards of total offense. Georgia's only going to have about 200, and they're going to have a couple turn. Fromm's going to throw a couple picks. Alabama's going to win it, but it's going to be they're going to turn it over too. Turnover is going to be key.
I need a score.
I think Alabama's going to win. I think it's going to be 27 to 14. Just
don't give away my score, but look up on the board over there. I wrote my score up there yesterday. So it's pretty similar, but I think you said the key was what Fromm can do. To be honest with you, I'm going the opposite, and it's been the same narrative the last 2 years, and it's that of in a big game when Alabama plays a big game, the big key is who? The big key is always Jalen Hurts is the X factor. Whether he plays well or bad, that's going to determine if Alabama is going to dominate this game or not. We've seen him play poorly, and Alabama still win. But win ugly, and this Clemson game was not pretty. It was an ugly win, but they won, and Hurts struggled. He struggled against Auburn, and they lost. So it really just depends on how he's going to play, because these teams are like a carbon copy of each other. They have very tough defense. They have incredibly physical and running backs with a lot of depth at the position. And the biggest, if you looked at both teams, because of how similar they are, and there was one big glaring difference that stood out to you, it would be the quarterbacks. Because Alabama, the only difference between these two teams, ideally, is Alabama has a quarterback, a player who touches the ball every single snap, that has more of a playmaking ability than Jake Fromm, because he can do it with his legs. He can get outside and confuse defenses and stretch plays out, and he gives himself more of an opportunity to make a play, whereas Jake Fromm needs a lot of other things to happen for things like that. I haven't seen Jake Fromm be able to roll out and extend a play when the running game's breaking down and everything like that. So the X factor to me in this game is, as it always is when Alabama plays a big game, what is Jalen Hurts, what is big number two, going to do for you? And in this instance, I think he does just enough again with his legs, and he's able to extend drives and run the clock more and continue to win that field position for Alabama. And Aaron, you saw my score. I predicted this yesterday morning, probably sometime around 9 o'clock. It is going to be Alabama winning the national championship over Georgia 27-17. So very close in score there. We're going to take a quick break. Me and Aaron both picked Alabama 27-17, 27-14. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to predict a little bit of what's going to happen in the wild card race today and tomorrow in the NFL playoffs. Stay tuned. Tony Mack and the Triplet, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet here on Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. The last segment here, and I want to add some closure to that segment of Jay and I going back and forth on Twitter. No hard feelings towards him at all. I like to argue sports. It doesn't mean I dislike you for your opinion. A couple things that have happened since then. He said, someone who watches every snap of their season, the throws he made were routine. He made them every game. The claim is garbage, ? Well, tell that to the dozens of Power 5 team programs who have been doing the same for a century. And my reply was, their claims are still more legit than Central Florida. Can't compare this team to them. This team is comparable to the 06-07 Boise State, the 2008 Utah, and that Urban Meyer Utah team. It was either 04-05. I think it was 04-05. And they're great teams, great seasons, just not champions. And then he was saying something else about it. He gets the motivation excuse. These teams are now 8-3 in those types of games. Who beat the Power 5? We need new excuses. I said, no, we don't need an excuse. We just need the committee to sack up one time, put them in, and let them get spanked by daddy and end the argument once and for all. He believes that they'll have a chance and that they should have a claim, and I don't. That's fine if you disagree. I don't dislike you for that opinion. We're just going to disagree. But here's my biggest complaint of UCF claiming this national championship. This is my whole reason for disliking this, Jay, and it sounds like you're a fan of UCF, so you might like this. I like this UCF team. I really like this UCF team. Their quarterback is very gritty. The reason why I don't like this claim is because I think it takes away from that incredible season they had this year. The length that they're going to, the giving the bonuses is cool, but the throwing the parade, the changing their name on Twitter, the hanging a banner, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing, this program. And now I don't remember the name of the guy off the top of my head, but a UCF alum even came out and said, this is embarrassing.
Just enjoy the perfect – just make shirts for perfect season. It was a perfect season. Enjoy it for what it is. It's happened before. You're not the first team to this to happen to.
Right.
Contrary to your popular belief that the UCF is trying to make this like they're the only team that this has ever happened
to. Here's my question to you. When you said they're not the only team this ever happened to, what teams pop into your head? It's not those other teams in the past century that have claimed national championships. It's the teams I just mentioned, the Boise State. Heck, the UCF from 2011 to that, or 2012. No, excuse me, 2013, 2014. Even that they went and won a Fiesta Bowl over Baylor. You know what I mean? I don't know if they were perfect or not. They may have been.
No, I think they had one or two losses.
I can't remember, but that was the whole Bortles season. But I mean, we've seen big group of five teams, and I always like the underdog coming and winning big games like that. I love that. I loved what UCF did to Auburn. I wish it would have been to someone else, so my wife wouldn't have been so upset. But I like that. That's why I don't like them claiming this championship, because it hurts them, in my opinion. It embarrasses them, and even your own alumni says so.
And even since 2000, there have been two Power 5 teams go unbeaten, Auburn in 2004 and Ohio State in 2012. So not only are you not the only group of five, but there are some Power 5s also
in
there.
And those Power 5 have a bigger claim.
Much bigger claim.
Because they play a tougher schedule. Now, Aaron, we have less than a minute here. Quickly, just the games that are happening today in the NFL, Titans, Chiefs, Falcons, Rams, who wins and why?
I've got the Chiefs over the Titans.
Of course you do. You don't have to say you have Chiefs over the Titans for any reason other than you hate the Titans.
Yes, but I think the Chiefs are a better team if they play to their full potential. It depends on, like you said during break, which Chiefs team shows up. But I got the Chiefs, and I got the Rams over the Falcons. It just so happens that I dislike the Titans and the Falcons, so go Rams and Chiefs.
I have a strange suspicion that the Titans are going to win this game, so I'm picking the Titans.
I do too.
And I'm actually going to go Falcons. I want the Rams to win really bad, but I have this suspicion that the Falcons have the experience they need to get there. That's going to do it for this very truncated edition of Tony Mac and the Triplet. We'll be back next week. Enjoy Alabama basketball pregame now. Tip off at 11. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week.